The Parsha of Balak is without a doubt unique among the Parshas of the Torah for so many reasons. Not least of which is that it gives us, from the Torah's point of view, the outsider's perspective on the Jewish people. It's presented from the vantage point of our enemy or enemies. How they perceive us, what they are afraid of, what they like or dislike about us, and what they would like to do about it. And there's a great deal to learn from that. Me oivai techakmeni, as David HaMelech says. You can learn sometimes more about yourself from your enemies than you can from your friends. And let us begin just by reading the psukim. The parsha begins in Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Beis. Once again, complete error on the part of whoever apportioned the chapters. This is the beginning of the parsha. Vayar Balak ben Sipor, es kol asher aso Yisrael lo emori. So, Balak sees everything Yisrael did to the Emori. They decimated the Emori, and Moab is afraid. Vayaga Moab mipnei ha'am. They're afraid of the people. They have a dislike for Bnei Yisrael. They're repulsed by them. So they send a message to the elders of Midian. They're going to completely destroy our surroundings. Just like the ox will completely uproot everything in the field. And it's very interesting, even before we go further in the parsha to see what happens with Balak and with Bilam, just to pay attention to the way that the Torah is expressing itself. Because if we consider how Balak is presented, it seems to be somewhat fragmented. He is the first person mentioned in the Parsha. Vayar Balak ben Sipor. Three psukim later, in the end of Pasuk Dalet, we are informed, Ubalak ben Sipor, Melech leMoav veIsohi. Balak was the king of Moab at that time. And the question that the Mefarshim were very interested to know is why the Torah split things up in this way. The general mode of presentation is whatever there is relevant to know about the person, we're told from the outset. If we could conjecture how the Torah would or should have presented it, would be to say, says the Ramban, Vayar Balak ben Sipor, Melech Moav, Eskola Sheri Sorlo Emori. In fact, between us, it's probably more relevant that he's the king of Moab than his father was called Sipor, I imagine. We have never heard of Tzipor, except that we know that Balak was his son. So in terms of placing him and giving me a certain context, it's very nice to say Balak ben Tzipor, but what's much more pertinent is his role in affairs here as Melech Moab. And that's thrown in as an afterthought. That's really what it sounds like. Here's Balak, and we're involved, and then they're afraid, and then they talk to Midian. Oh, and, just you should know, Balak was the king of Moab, because otherwise things won't make sense much more from this point on. That's the first thing. It's also interesting to note that the communications and the messages that are sent are largely from Balak. For example, Pasuk Hey Vayishlach Malachim El Bilam Ben Boor, he sends Malachim, that's Balak sends to Bilam. But the very first message was not sent by Balak. And that's Mefurish in the Pasuk. But Pasuk Dalet states, Vayomer Moav El Ziknei Midian. Moav says to the elders of Midian, they sound the alarm, Yitoy Lachachu HaKolos, Kol Sivu Hoseinu, etc. So, that's another interesting question, because, I mean, Balak is the king. So, and from this point onwards, from Pasuk Hay and onwards, all things will be directed by Balak. But the original message, it seems, was not sent by Balak, but by Moab in a much more generic and general sense. The question is, where was Balak at that time? And it is for this reason that these are important parshanut questions. There are a number of approaches, but just to respond to them, the Ramban of Derech HaPshat understands that what the pasuk means to say is as follows. Balak, and there is evidence for this in Chazal, Balak did not begin his career, or as we know him, as the king of Moab. He is not naturally the heir to the throne of Moab. Balak's primary skill and qualification is that of a warrior. He was a general. He is one of the Saranim. And in a sense, that is why at the beginning of the Parsha, he actually is called Balak ben Zippor, because that's all he was. And from a certain point of view, the way that he sees things will be decisive. But he's not the king of Moab. And moreover, as the Ramban puts it, there is no king of Moab, or perhaps none to speak of. That means that in the face of this national crisis that they perceive themselves to be facing, Melech Moab, if he exists or maybe doesn't exist, is not an entity to speak of. And that is why originally the alarm is sounded by Moab, because they have no leader at the beginning. So Pasuk Dalet states, Vayomer Moab al Siknei Midian. They can have a meeting together. We're in trouble. We have to do something. So the question is, well, did they do anything? What was the outcome of the meeting? Says Ramban, the outcome of the meeting is the end of Pasuk Dalet, which states, O Balak ben Zippor, Melech leMoab beisahi. At that was the time that Balak became Melech Moab. That was actually the most useful thing they could do, because no one knew what to do except for Balak. But he's not in charge. So the most useful thing they can do is to put him in charge. And that's why initially he is presented to us only by name, because that's all he has. What sounds like the Torah filling in information is actually the development of the meeting. Once Balak has been appointed in charge, he takes over, he sends to Bilam, and he is the leader from this point onwards. So that's a very interesting approach of the Ramban, again, to these very basic pshat questions. We're so familiar with the psukim, we could describe it in our own words, but we should never forget to look at the Torah's words, how it describes it, because then we get the full measure of what's going on. So Bilam is consulted for his particular skill set, and after a short bout of playing hard to get, he's on the way. And what happens is, in Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Kaf Beis. So he's been told to go, or he's been given permission to go under certain circumstances. That said, he just gets up and goes without making any qualifications, as if to imply that he's been given complete permission to do what he wants, which is, of course, completely incorrect. And that is why, although a number of Mefarshim have the question that once you've allowed him to go, so why are you so angry that he went? Which is really the way that it happens. The first time he asked, the answer was no. The second time the answer was yes. So yes is yes. He shouldn't have nudged, but he did. And the answer was yes. So once the answer is yes, and he goes, so why is Hashem angry? So the answer, says the Ramban, is because the second time round the answer was not yes. The answer the second time is, you can go, but you need to know that you can only do what I tell you to do. That is the answer. Now if Bilam doesn't say a word, and the next morning he just gets up and says, okay, we can go, that is a misrepresentation. Because of course, the implication is that whatever you want to do, I've been licensed to do. That's not true. So, Vayicha Afalokim Ki Holechu, Hashem was angry with him for going just like that, without saying anything, without adding any of the fine print as to what he is able or unable to do. And so, Vayicha Afalokim Ki Holechu, so a malach is sent, Vayisatzev Malach Hashem Baderech L'Sotan Lo. to disrupt him. But amazingly, as Rashi points out, the more disrupted he will be, the better it is will be for him. In other words, as much as we say the satana to frustrate him, but ultimately the best thing that could happen to him would be to be frustrated, because he is headed to his doom. He is headed to a failed venture. And therefore, if you'd be unable to go, that will be a great deal of control of damage. So what we call l'satan lo, as Rashi says, Malach Hashem, at Malach Hashem, which is always the name of Rachamim, sometimes if a person's on a destructive path, then to frustrate their destructive path is the greatest act of mercy. Amazing that the focus of this mercy is Bilam himself. Now, the donkey sees what Bilam doesn't see, and it takes various evasive measures. The first time it just wanders around, Bilam doesn't know what's going on. The second time, which is in Pasuk Kaf Dalet of Perek Kaf Beis, Vayamod Malach Hashem b'mishol akramim. So the Malach stands now in the footpath. Gader mizeh v'gader mizeh. And there is a fence on either side. Gader, Rashi says, actually more of a wall. In fact, there is a Medrash Tanchuma which tells us that Bilam actually has a history of association with Bnei Yisrael, because Bilam is descended from Lavan. So says the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Perek Chelek. And actually, Lavan and Yaakov, apart from the many other things, have a non-aggression pact. That's the last thing that they agreed. Just before Yaakov took final leave of Lavan, Imtanes ben Osai, no one should act aggressively or towards the other. And they actually set up a monument to remember that. And that monument was called Gal-Eid, the pile of stones, which is witness, or as Lavan called it, Yegar Sadusa. Says the Tanchuma, that is the wall that crushed Bilam's foot. Here in this Mishol HaKramim, Gader Mizeh v'Gader Mizeh, one of the walls on one of the sides is Gal-Eid, because he is actually on his way to violate the non-aggression pact that his father set up, or his grandfather set up, against Bnei Yisrael. The wall says, not so fast. Now, Bilam ignores all of this until finally the donkey begins to speak. And this is indeed a wondrous occurrence. The Pasuk says, and Pasuk Kavches, Vayiftach Hashem es pi ha'osom. What I do to you? You hit me three times already. When I strayed, when I squashed your leg, when I just stopped. And you've hit me three times. Now there's actually a difference of opinion amongst the Mefarshim as to how much to perceive within the words of the donkey. In other words, on the face of it, the donkey doesn't seem to have said anything particularly profound, because it really said what anyone would say if they could speak, which is, why did you hit me? Three times already. And according to some Mefarshim, that's it. I mean, that's all there is to it. Rashi is certainly the way that the Torah phrases what the donkey said. Ki kisani zeh sholosh regolim. That's a very Jewish expression, sholosh regolim. And Rashi says what it means is they in time will celebrate the Shalosh Regalim. How can you think you can go up against a nation like this? So the donkey either needs Rashi to explain the depth of what it means, and I don't even know if Bilam had Rashi, which means, could it be that he's ignoring almost everything else? I mean, could it be that he really chapped everything that the donkey was saying? I don't know. But maybe according to other Rishonim, Advarim Kipshutam, that's all. The donkey's just saying, why did you hit me? That's all. What's the point? The point is that you need to know that as much as you think that you have control over what you say, so the message that's coming through here is that someone higher than you has control. Evidence being that a being that is unable to talk, all of a sudden, is able to talk. And if that's the message, then it almost doesn't really make so much of a difference what it's saying. even if it's saying things that a donkey would say, the point that it has the power of speech because it's been granted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If Hashem gave a donkey the ability to speak, he can certainly take it away from you or channel it in a way that that you are unable to circumvent. And that is the message of the words of the donkey. Now, there is a shaila that was addressed to one of the great Rishonim, the Radvaz, in the Tshuvos, Simen Elef, Shishim Vashesh, 1066, which for an Englishman is very easy for me to remember. And the Medrash says as follows, with regards to the confrontation between Eliyahu and Nevi Habal, and Har HaKarmel, and Sefer Melachim, Perek Yudches. And so as we know, so Eliyahu said, you take one, we'll take one, put them both in the Mizbeach, whoever's the real one, the fire will come down. Now the Pasuk says, Vayikhu es hapar asher nosan lohem. They, meaning the Nevi'e Habal, they took the par that he gave them. Now there is a comment of the Medrash here, which says as follows. Amar lo hapar le'eliyahu. So the cow, when it's time to be handed over to Nevi'e Habal, the cow didn't want to go. Because who would? Who wants to go to Nevi'e Habal? Amar lo hapar le'eliyahu. Let's listen to the words of the Medrash. Ani v'chaveirai yatzanu mi'beten echad. So they were deliberately chosen as close together as possible, so they were actually two cows that were born together. So we're exactly the same. We grew up exactly the same. And he is going to become a korban. And through him, Hashem's name will be sanctified. How did I get such bad mazel? We're exactly the same, me and him. And he becomes a korban, and I'm going to become an object of Avodah Zorah. Lahachia says, Bori, they're going to offer me the Nevi'e Habal. It's not fair. It's like almost like the Soril Hashem and the Soril Azazel. Amar lo Eliyahu. So Eliyahu says, Lech imahem. Go with them. Why? Keshem sheshmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu miskadesh ayidei zeh she'imi. Because you are an equally necessary tool for the Kiddush Hashem that is about to happen through you and through the other animal. As surely as Hashem's name will be sanctified through the cow that I'm taking, but you need to be there for it not to work in order for the full Kiddush Hashem to come out. Kach yiskadish ayodecha. Amarlo, now, it's interesting because the cow is not convinced. I think most people probably would have acceded at that stage to Eliyahu HaNavi, but not the cow. Amarlo, that's your etza to me, that's your advice. If you want me to go, you're going to have to take me. That's why it says, he wasn't going to go with them until Eliyahu took him and gave him over to Nevi'e Habal. Adkan Divrei HaMedrash. Now, what's the shaila? I mean, in addition to all of the other shailas that one could ask about this. But the shaila of the correspondent of the Radvaz was, this sounds to be very similar to Parshas Balak, whereby you have an animal and he starts to talk. And if we may add, it's not critical, but if we may add, it seems to be on a much more sophisticated level than the donkey. The donkey says, why'd you hit me? This cow gave a whole pilpul, right? He's a Kiddush Hashem, and I'm a Kiddush Hashem, and I'm not convinced, and I mean, that's high level. So the questioner wanted to know, so how come there is no mention of this in the Pasuk? This would seem to be much more mention worthy than the cow, than the donkey, or at least equally so. But there's no mention. Chazal will tell us in the Medrash, but really, in a sense, the question is, why did the Pasuk leave it for that? Why is there no mention? In fact, one could say that it could have mooted the entire test. Because if they're looking for a sign as to who's the right one, and even if even the cow can work it out, so maybe that's you have your answer there and then. says the Radvaz, Kvayodua, the explanation is, and I mention this here because it is a key for many, many such questions. Kvayodua, ki kol ha'odam, every person, v'chol bal chai, every living being, v'chol ilam v'chol esev, and every tree, every plant, yesh lo koach v'sar lemala. This is a yisod that we see a number of times in the Medrash. The Ramchal and others talk about it extensively, that actually existence is multi-layered. And in fact, what we perceive as the existence around us is the lowest of the levels. But everything that exists here exists on a higher and higher plane, and the more spiritual and rarefied the plane, the more sensitive and the more developed is the representation of everything. So what looks like a tree down here in the physical realm, in the spiritual realm, must be a spiritual entity and a spiritual cognitive entity. There's a famous statement of Chazal, each blade of grass has a sar that hits him on the head and tells him to grow. Makeo kalkodo v'omelo gedal. That's a yisod in chinuch, by the way. When you hit the Talmud over the head, don't forget to tell him to grow. Some people grow that way. Now, being that's the case, says the Radvaz, you need to understand, whenever the Medrash tells you that there's a conversation going on between Eliyahu and the cow, or whatever it may be, or for that matter, there's a machlokas going on between Har Carmel and Har Tavor, which every child knows about that. Who should the Torah be given on? Or when the Yam Suf does not wish to part before Moshe because it claims seniority, because Moshe is a human being created on the sixth day. The water, the sea is created on the third day. All of these conversations are not taking place in terms of the interaction of the physical entities that we see in front of us, but rather on a much higher level between the cognitive entity that's in charge of these things, that is responsible for these things. It's between the Sar. And in fact, this, according to many Mefarshim, is the meaning behind it. It's a well-known collection of psukim called Perek Shira, where it goes through each and every entity and says, this animal or this being, what does it say? And it quotes a pasuk. Kelev mahu omer, tzvardeya mahu omer, and so it goes, and there's many, many editions of this nowadays, and it's dated back to antiquity. And what it means is, say the Mefarshim, that the sar, which represents the absolute spiritual essence of this unique being, or type of being, this is the pasuk that is pertinent to it. And therefore, says the Radvaz, any conversation that takes place is more a question of the Navi, being a Navi, logging in, we would say, to, or tapping in to the higher level where there is a cognitive entity who is representing this item. And that being the case, says Radvaz, there is no kasha anymore as to why the Pasuk didn't talk about it, because that's actually not a miracle. That is a function of the spiritual power of the Navi. The Navi is able to connect himself to the higher realm where the Sar of this entity is able to communicate with him. So that's the Madrega of the Navi. But it's not a miracle. The miracle is in Parshas Balak. Because for the donkey itself to open its mouth and speak in a way that people could hear, that's already a violation of a departure from every norm. And that is why, even if there is no great deal of profundity in the words of the donkey per se, and it is only there to illustrate that the donkey can speak if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wills it, that is the only time that the Pasuk will talk about this, because it is very different, categorically different, than any of the other conversations that we will hear about or read about in the Midrashim, which is more between the Sarim or the Navi and the Sar. So that's the teretz of the Radvaz, and he himself says, there's many Midrashim that will be much easier to understand, and even psukim, the things that we say in Tehillim, Yismuchu Hashemayim V'Sogel Aretz, so far so good, but Oz Yiranenu Atzei HaYa'ar, read and translate, right, the trees of the forest will be singing. That's what it says. Now, it could be a metaphor, or, says the Radvaz, it can mean that the simcha that will exist in the world will actually be resonate within the sarim of all of these things. Oziranu, atzei hayar. And so it is with other such psukim. So that's an important yesod from the Radvaz with regards to this matter. Now, Bilam is not getting it. And he hits the donkey, and the donkey talks, and Bilam just answers back, and nothing is really moving anywhere. Until the Malach appears to him. And that is in Pasuk Lamed Beis. And of course, everything will change at this point. Vayomer elav Malach Hashem. Al moi kisas ason chazeh sholosh regolim. Why'd you hit your donkey 3 times? Hine anochi yotzosi lesotan ki yorat haderech lenegdi. I'm the one who it's all about. That's why the donkey was so afraid. Now, it's very interesting if we just start again from the beginning of the pasuk and consider what is it that the Malach wishes to say to Bilam. Now, as we know what the Malach is there, the Malach is essentially there to stop him. Because he's about to try and do something very dangerous to Bnei Yisrael, or either that or to himself. The job of the Malach is to stop him. So the Malach addresses him. And what does he say? Why did your donkey? It's an interesting opening. Meaning, considering what's at stake, hitting his donkey is the least of his troubles. The Malach says to him, that's not nice. But it's true, it's not nice, but that's it. That's the first business of the day. There's more pressing matters at stake. It's your campaign against the Jewish people. Which actually isn't really spoken about so much. So the Sforno explains, Al Derech HaPshat, that when the Malach says to Bilam, why did you hit your donkey? It's not so much sticking up for the donkey. The donkey is not the potential victim here. It's not the focus of all of our attention. So when the Malach says, why did you hit the donkey? It's not so much the donkey's rights per se. But really it's asking Bilam, how could you have completely missed the point? That when your donkey started acting in such a strange way and going this way and that way, you didn't get it. And all you did was hit the donkey. So Amai Kisa Sasonka is not the hitting of the donkey per se, but it's how could you have missed the point? And as the Sforno adds, that moreover, Bilam's job, right, his profession, he is a kosein. What does a kosein do? He looks for signs. That means Bilam's job is to be able to see things that other people can't see, whether it's in the constellations or in whatever it is, right? He has this gift of perception. Says the Sforno, Nu, you're so perceptive. You are meant to be able to detect things that no one else would see. And here, your donkey starts wandering all over the place and you don't see anything. Your job is to respond to this sort of thing, even to murmurs. And something much more extreme happened and it completely went by you. What does that tell you about how blinkered you are at this stage? Next pasuk, Lamed Gimel, Vatir Ani Ha'ason. Vateit Lefanai Zeh L'Sholosh Regalim. So we read this pasuk carefully. So the donkey saw me, veered one way or the other these 3 times. Ulai natsami panai. Now the word ulai is a very interesting expression. Because ulai means maybe. Who is talking? The Malach. Are you not sure? We're just reading and translating. The Mara says, maybe the donkey veered off because of me. What else could it be? You know that it's because of you. So why does he say ulai? You should know, by the way, that if you look in Rashi, Rashi says that the word ulai here does not mean maybe. Because there is no maybe. It's definite. Rashi has his own perush what the word ulai means. But the Sfarno says, no, ulai does mean maybe. But who is in doubt? Malach is not in doubt. What does he mean, ulai not sami panai? What it means, it says the Sfarno, is you should have considered, at least as a possibility, that maybe there's something in its way that's not allowing it to go forward in a normal way. Maybe, ulai not sami panai, maybe there was something happening. You didn't even count it in as a possibility. That's how blind you are to any counter message. That's what the Malach is saying. And therefore, this is the understanding of what the Malach means when he says, why did you hit the donkey three times? It means, how could you completely miss the point and take it out on the donkey? It means you have no idea what's going on. So it's more about Bilam than it is about the donkey. Interestingly, we should know that there is a sugya in the Gemara. There is a discussion in the end of the second parak of Bava Metzia with regards to the concept called Tsar Ba'alei Chaim. Tsar Ba'alei Chaim, cruelty to animals. The Gemara wants to know, on what level is that a problem? Meaning, is it a problem on an equivalent level to a De'oraisa prohibition? Tsar Ba'alei Chaim De'oraisa means the Torah itself, it's considered a violation of a Torah principle to be cruel to animals. Is that the case? Or Derabbanan? What difference does it make? There's many possible ramifications. At the moment, we're just concerned with the question. We're familiar with the expression, Tsar Ba'alei Chaim. We know that it's not nice. We know that it's a problem. Where does the problem come from? Is it a problem from the Torah itself? It is a violation of a Torah prohibition? And that's the machlokas. But if it is the Oraisa, if it comes from the Torah, the question is, from where in the Torah? And the Torah never openly says, Lo titzaru kol behema, which is would be explicit. The Rambam, in the Moreh Nevuchim, in the Chelek Gimel, Perek Yud Zayin, discusses the issue of Tsar Ba'alei Chaim, and says that the one who holds the Tsar Ba'alei Chaim is the Oraisa, what is his makor? His makor is the Malach, who spoke to Bila and said, why did you hit your donkey? That means that the Malach in the Chumash is operating and responding to Torah issues. If the first thing that came out of the Malach's mouth was, why did you hit your donkey? That means that it is a violation of a Torah problem, Torah prohibition to hit your donkey. That's aside from any other business, namely your designs against the Jewish people. Amazing. And therefore, the Rambam, different than the Sfarno, understands that Amai Kisa Sasoncha is not just about you missing the point. It's about, aside from everything else, you hit your donkey. You can't do that. Tsar Ba'alei Chaim, Daraisa. Let us see one ramification of this machlokas, Tsar Ba'alei Chaim. There is a mitzvah from the Torah that is intimately bound up with Tsar Ba'alei Chaim. It's a very complex relationship, but it's the obligation if there's an animal that's staggering under its load, Azov Tazovimo. If you kitire shoev roveitz tachas maso'o, Azov Tazovimo. If it's crouching, it can't get up, etc. Now, what's very interesting is, so that's black on white. That's a mitzvah, one of the 613 mitzvahs of Azov Tazovimo, to help it, to help unload, and then to help reload, and all of that. But what's interesting is, the pasuk says, Azov Tazov Imo. You need to help together with the owner. And what that means is, it's a very interesting shaila. See, the owner could actually take advantage of the situation, because he's piled up his donkey, or his animal, in excess. And even if he didn't, the animal is now stumbling. Here's a Jew on the side of the road, and everybody knows that he has a mitzvah to help. So that means that I can just go to the side of the road, take it easy, while he does his mitzvah. Is that correct? Meaning, what if he does that? What is my situation now? So the Gemara says very interestingly that from azov to azov imo means you only need to be involved with the animal if the owner himself is involved. But he can't take advantage of you, and he can't say, oh, wonderful, you do your mitzvah and I'll go get a drink. Azov to azov imo. Now what's interesting is, and that's the drosha, and everyone holds of it in one form or another, but what's interesting is, how does this relate to Tsar Balei Chaim, to Araisa? Because if there is a problem with Tsar Balei Chaim, so there's no reason why the poor animal should suffer just because you have moral issues with the owner of the animal. In other words, the Torah says, if he's helping, if he's involved, you get involved. If he's not involved, you don't get involved, because why should you suffer? But why should the animal suffer? Because in the meanwhile, while you're having your moral standoff, the animal is still in pain. And that is why the Gemara says that if indeed Tsar Balei Chaim is a Torah issue, then when we say that you don't need to help him if he's not helping himself, it means that you don't need to do it for free. You certainly need to get involved because of the poor animal, but you are entitled to demand remuneration afterwards. So the animal doesn't need to suffer. The owner needs to suffer for taking advantage of you. So that's what it would look like if Tsar Balei Chaim is the Araisa. The animal can never lose out. But, says the Gemara, if Tsar Balei Chaim is the Rabbanon, meaning the Torah has no issue per se with Tsar Balei Chaim, then there's the mitzvah to help the person, but if he doesn't help himself, you don't have to help him, and if the animal is staggering under the load, it's not your problem. That's what it sounds like. Now what's interesting is, the Rambam, in the Halachas, in Mishnah Torah, when he brings this drosha of azov to azov imo, help the animal together with the owner, says that if the owner is involved, you get involved. But if the owner goes and sits by the side of the road, so can you. You're exempt. Now what's noteworthy about that ruling of the Rambam is the Rambam left it very open. It seems to imply you're completely exempt. He didn't add the small print of you're exempt for doing it for free, but of course you have to do it, but you can charge him for it. And he didn't say any of that. It sounds like you're completely exempt. But that sounds like the Rambam's position is that Tsar Balei Chaim ultimately is the Rabbanon, and therefore you don't have to get involved if the owner's not getting involved. But of course our question is, you did identify in the Moreh Nevuchim, you the Rambam, that Tsar Balei Chaim is sourced in the Torah. The Malach spoke about it and said, why did you hit your donkey? And you highlighted that as the source of Tsar Balei Chaim's Daraisa. So then, how do you, Rambam, it seems, actually paskin that Tsar Balei Chaim is not Daraisa? What about the donkey, and what about the angel, and what about Bilam, and what about all of that? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, the answer, perhaps, is very simple. Because there is an important difference between the situation with Bilam and the donkey, and what we're talking about, that if he doesn't get involved, then you don't have to get involved. The difference is that in the case of the donkey, the animal is staggering under the load, and the owner isn't helping it, so you are entirely passive. You are not being cruel to an animal. It's true that an animal may be suffering, but that is not something that you're inflicting. That's called shev la'altase. That's called passive. There is very often a decisive difference between being passive and being active. There's many things that you would not be able to do actively, but it doesn't mean that you have to take action to counter them. That's a further step. And therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov, it could be, everyone would agree, but this is an important statement, because that means that no one ever, ever says that Tsar Balei Chaim is not Daraisa, so you can inflict cruelty to animals. No, says the Rambam. The Malach said to Bilam, you hit your donkey? How could you hit it? For no reason. Even though it's your donkey, but how could you hit it? No one would allow that, say that's permissible. That's objectionable on a Torah level. What becomes the machlokas in the Gemara is when you're not actively inflicting pain on the animal, but rather you're in a situation where you could take action in order to relieve the pain of the animal, that's a separate question. There's a machlokas, whether it's Daraisa or Drabonon. The Rambam seems to have paskan that it's Drabonon. So that's the first point. I would add perhaps something else. There is another halacha that I think we're all very familiar with. We don't maybe naturally classify it or make a point of classifying it under Tzar Balei Chayim, but when you think about it, that's exactly what it is. The Pasuk says in the second paragraph of the Shema, "V'nasati esev besodcha levemtecha ve'achalta v'savata." I will give pasture for your animal to eat, and then you eat. And actually, there is a halacha that it is aser for a person to eat before they fed their animal. And based on those psukim, because first the pasuk says, your animal will eat, esev besodcha levemtecha, take care of your animal, and then you eat. It's aser to eat before you have fed your animal. It comes out in a very interesting way in the Gemara, because the Gemara actually talks about this within the context of brachas. A person is not allowed to interrupt between making a bracha on food and eating. That's called a hefsek, and that we never do. So you made your hamotzi, between hamotzi lechem and aras and eating, nothing can come between them. Unless you need to say something that's somehow necessary for eating. And what would that be? Well, the Gemara says, you know, there's a mitzvah to have salt, to dip your challah in salt. You could actually say, in principle, you could say, bring salt. Amazingly, the Gemara says, you can also say, feed the animals. In between having said, amosi lechem and aretz, and eating, you can say, feed them. Why? Because you can't eat before your animals have eaten, and therefore it is as necessary to feed the animals for you to be able to put the bread in your mouth, as it's no less than bringing salt to the table. It's not even a hefsek. It's called litzara. It's very interesting how certain things come into the Gemara. Now, the Netziv, in the footnotes, Harchev Dover to the Hamak Dover in Parshas Kitetze, so the Netziv asks the question, this sounds like it has Tzar Balei Chayim written all over it. Why is it true that you can't eat before your animals have eaten? Because if they don't eat, they're hungry. Obviously, you don't need to force feed your animals just because you feel like having a snack in between meals. But it means that assuming that the regular time for you eating and your animal eating coincides, so your animal's hungry. And it is also for you to eat until you take care of it. Why? Because when it's hungry, it's in distress. And some say that's a Torah law. But that sounds like Tzar Balei Chayim. And it's, moreover, it sounds like Tzar Balei Chayim de Araisa, because the Torah has told you. And also it's Shev Al Taseh, because you're not being cruel to the animal. This is also passive. But it's not good enough. You have to take action. Says the Netziv, why doesn't anyone look at this halacha that is so well known and draw a proof from here that Tzar Balei Chayim is d'oraisa? You're not allowed to let your animals go hungry. And the answer of the Netziv is very interesting. And that is, here, it's different. Because it's your animal. The Torah gives a person responsibility to take care of animals that are in their domain, that are under their control, that are in their jurisdiction. When the question of Tzar Balei Chayim d'oraisa, that's between you and the entire animal kingdom. There's an animal on the road, it's someone else's animal. It's not yours, it's not your responsibility. Now the question is Tzar Balei Chayim d'oraisa to make it your responsibility? Even though you never assumed responsibility, you didn't assume ownership and therefore proprietorship with the care that goes with it. And therefore, says the Netziv, which is also an important chiddush halacha, when it comes to your own animal, so certainly Tzar Balei Chayim is d'oraisa. Because if you took it in, you've assumed responsibility for it. And that's true, by the way. Because you're only held up from eating before you feed your own animals, not before someone else feeds their animals. And you don't have to feed someone else's animals, or you'd never eat anything. And therefore, there's a whole shine in Parshas Noach. I mean, if Noach apparently was the owner of the entire animal kingdom, how could he ever eat? It's always, someone's always going to be hungry somewhere. And therefore, this halacha is more about your relationship, not so much to man relating to animal per se, but man relating to his animals per se. You've undertaken achrayas. You have to live up to it. You can't eat before you feed your animals. And therefore, it could be that based on this distinction of the netziv between a person and their own animals, where Tzar Balei Chayim is certainly d'oraisa, that may be another response as to how it is that someone could say Tzar Bale Chaim is Durabonon and not learn from Bilam. Again, our question is, Bilam was told by the Malach, why do you eat your donkey? What's the answer? The answer is, it's his donkey. If it's your own donkey, you can't even eat before it eats. Certainly you're not allowed to hit it. But that doesn't tell you necessarily anything about a person's responsibility to animal per se. That remains open, remains the machlokas, and the Rambam actually seems to say that it's Durabonon. So it's most fascinating because we're in the middle of this drama of Balak and Bilam and Jewish people, and the Torah just interrupts everything and says, aside from everything else, the first thing the Malach says is, you can't eat your donkey. It's the Raita. And then on to other business. Now, and apart from anything else, it once again gives us occasion to consider the relationship between the various works of the Rambam, which is another question altogether, between things that he says in the Mishnah Torah and things that he says in the Mor Nevuchim, how they interact and relate one to the other. In the Mishnah Torah, he seems to have said that Tzar Bale Chaim is Rabbanon. In the Mor Nevuchim, he's providing a source for being Min HaTorah, but it's the same Rambam. And they need to be reconciled and worked out, and the Mefarshim get to work. But let's move back now to the general question. So the Malach is saying, why do you hit your donkey? And at a certain point, Bilam realizes that he's made a big mistake. And that he says in Pasuk Lamedalet, Vayomer Bilam, El Malach Hashem Chatasi, I made a mistake. I didn't see it. You know what? So you know what? I'm prepared to back down. Amazing. It's probably the first time Bilam said this in his life. You know what? I'm prepared to go back. Now, what's very important for us is this is the reason that the Malach was sent there in the first place. The Malach was sent lesotondo, to frustrate his plans. He's on his way to curse the Jewish people. The job of the Malach is to stop him from doing that. And actually, he has succeeded. Because he's brought Bilam to a point where Bilam says, if you just tell me to go back, I'll go back. So now what should happen? Tell him to go back. Parshas Balak would never look the same again. That's not our problem. Your job is to send him back. And he's offered to go back. And now what does the Malach say? Lamed hey. You know, it's fine. Go, keep going. Keep going? I was going anyway. What's this whole thing that's just happened these last 10 minutes? I was on my way anyway. So you stopped me. I offered to go back. You said, keep going. So that's a malach hashena tzricha legufa. This whole encounter is for nothing. The whole point of meeting me was to tell me to go. I was going. But of course we know that's not true. The point was to stop it from going. So the Malach seems to not really have done his job. Because when Bilam asked the critical question, the Malach says, okay, keep going. Just remember not to say anything you're not meant to say. He knew that already. That's an important shaila. Says the Sephorno, the reason why the Malach did not stop Bilam is because Bilam has not got the message. It's amazing. You know, when we look at Bilam in this Pasuk Lamed Dalet, where he says, listen, it's a bad idea, I'm prepared to go back. I mean, that's a breakthrough for Bilam. Says the Sforno, it's no breakthrough. It's still Bilam. You know what's interesting here? What Bilam is saying is, with all due respect, Malach, you're interfering in something that's none of your business. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, has already told me that I can go. Now, I don't know where you came from, but he said yes, and you're causing me problems. Now, there is no doubt that you're a stronger force than me. And if you tell me to go back, I'll go back. Because I can't go forward if you don't let me. But it's not right. Because God has already okayed it. So I'm not really sure why you're getting in the way. But if you tell me to go back, I'll go back. So that is an incorrect message. Because if he goes back now, he hasn't gone back because he realized it's a bad idea. It's wrong for him to go. He'll go back thinking, you know, it was right for me to go. A malach interfered. Have a look at Pasuk Lamed Aleph again. Vayomer Bilam, a malach Hashem, chatasi, I made a mistake. And by the way, let's read the end of the pasuk. Kilo yadati ka'atan tzavli krasi badera. I didn't realize you were there. I didn't notice you. Because why should I notice you? Why are you getting in the way? Va'ata imra be'einecha. Ashur bali. Listen, if you have a problem with this, I'll go back. Imra be'einecha, meaning God doesn't have a problem with this. Maybe you do. And if you do, there's nothing I can do about it. I'll go back. But you should know, if I go back, it's because you had a problem with it. Not that God has a problem with it. As it says the malach, you've missed the point completely. If you don't see that the malach was sent in order to let you know what God really wants from you, and you're going to proceed in the way that you have, so then you don't deserve to be sent back. Keep going. Lechem anoshi. What's interesting about the Tamei HaMikra is, in Lamed Aleph, Vayomer Bilam, El Malach Hashem Chatasi. If you look at the Tamei HaMikra, those words look like they run together. El Malach Hashem Chatasi. As if to say, apparently I've done something wrong against the Malach Hashem, but I haven't done anything wrong against Hashem himself. So if you're going to get involved and cause trouble for me, I'm no match for you. But this is perfectly fine as far as God is concerned. Says the Malach, so that's not called getting the message. And therefore, he doesn't deserve the mercy that the Malach was sent him for, and he's advised to keep going on his way. Ultimately, to his destruction, to his failure, disgrace and destruction. Now, let's take a look just for a moment at a very interesting comment which is said in the name of the Vilna Gaon. And it begins in Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Yud Ches. Now this is back in the second delegation that's sent to Bilam. And Bilam says to them, Vayan Bilam, Vayomer el Avdi Balak, Im etini Balak melabeso chesev ezahav. If Balak would give me his entire house full of gold and silver, lo uchal lavoras pi Hashem elokai, I'm not really capable of contravening God's wishes or God's commands. Lasos katana o gadola, to do anything not small, not big. It's a very interesting expression, lasos katana o gadola, because if he can't do anything small, he certainly can't do anything big. So in terms of the emphatic nature of what he's saying, it seems to be a little bit inverted, because he's saying, I could never go against God's wishes, I couldn't do anything small, even something small, and even something big. That kind of progression seems to be counterintuitive. So what does that mean? If we go to the next pasuk, Perek Kaf Gimel, pasuk Ches, or we begin with pasuk Zayin. This is the first message of Bilam. Vayusam Mishalov Vayamar Min Aram Yancheni Balak Melech Moav Miharei Keden. Balak has called for me from the east. Lecha Arn Arli Yaakov Lecha Zoma Yisrael. Come and curse Yaakov. Come and bring anger against Yisrael. But I can't. I can't curse that which Hashem hasn't cursed. I can't draw anger if Hashem isn't getting angry. Now, let's keep that pasuk in mind as we go back to pasuk Hay of this perek, Perek Kaf Gimel pasuk Hay, and this is where it starts. Vayasem Hashem davar b'fi Bilam. Just looking to translate. Well, the smoothest translation is Hashem put a word in Bilam's mouth. He put a matter in Bilam's mouth. Now we know that matter has two connotations. It can be a verbal matter or physical matter. Vayasem Hashem davar b'fi Bilam. It really sounds, or on a certain level, as if something physically has been placed in Bilam's mouth. Hashem put something in Bilam's mouth, which is an interesting way of looking at the pasuk. But what's more interesting is, But the Medrash actually gives us two explanations as to what was that thing that he put in Bilam's mouth. One opinion says, chako. Chako is a hook. So in case you're wondering, what was that thing that he put in Bilam's mouth? He put a hook in his mouth. Okay. The other opinion says, resen. Resen is a bit. Like to put in like in an animal's mouth. It's the front of a harness. So one says a hook, one says a bit. And we are not sure as to what is the significance of either of them. But it's all coming from Vayosem Hashem Dover b'fi Bilam. So the Vilna Gaon explains. As we know, there exists a concept in the world, of Hashem relates to the world, of Midas HaRachamim and Midas HaDin. The attribute of mercy, the attribute of justice. And these are the basis of how Hashem interacts with the world. Bilam, of course, is looking in ways that he thinks he knows how, and maybe he was right to a certain degree, to activate Midas HaDin. No one can really withstand Midas HaDin, certainly not an entire nation. And this brings us to certain names. As we know, Hashem has many names, and the reason why is because each name represents a certain attribute, a certain mode of interaction. There are names that are names of Rachamim and names of Din. Names of Din, as we know, are Elohim, which is Elohim, is Dayan, and also Ka. The Yud and the He, which is a truncated form of Yud Kei Vav Kei, is also a name of Din. Conversely, the two names of Rachamim are Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the name of Rachamim, and also Kael, the name of Chesed. Chesed Kael Kol Hayom. Now what's interesting is, when we consider these two sets of two names, Ka and Elohim as Din, and Kael and Yud Kei Vav Kei as Rachamim, we'll see that they're actually related to each other, because Elohim is an extension of Kael. Kael, if extended, becomes Elohim. Yud and He, if extended, becomes Yud Kei Vav Kei. And therefore, the way that we would describe what Bilam is looking to do is, on the one hand, he's looking to extend. He's looking to extend Kael to Elohim, with all of what that represents underneath those names. And on the other hand, he's looking to contract, he's looking to truncate Yud Kei Vav Kei into Yud and He. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, doesn't let him do that, but rather everything that comes out is an expression of Rachamim. But what that means is that Hashem is, what he wants to truncate, Hashem is elongating. He wants to just pull it back to Yud and He, Hashem keeps it going, Yud Kei Vav Kei. What he wants to elongate to Elohim, Hashem truncates to Kael. And this, says the Gaon, brings us to the item that was put in Bilam's mouth. Because there are two opinions given as to what that item was. One says a hook, and one says a bit. What is the function of those two things? A hook always restricts, right? It attaches the tongue to the side of the mouth, and that's that. It constricts movement. The bit, on the other hand, the further back in the mouth it goes, the more the tongue is extended. And this is the biur behind the Medrash, which says that there are two possibilities as to what the dovar is. Either the dovar would be the hook to constrict, whereas Bilam wishes to enunciate the name of Din with all that represents, but the hook stops him at Kael. And corresponding to that is where Bilam wants to keep it at Yud and He, but the bit extends what comes out of his mouth into Yud Kei Vav Kei. And that is, in name phraseology, a representation of what is going on here. And that is why, if we look back at the Pasuk, he's told in Pasuk Zayin, Lecha Ar Li Yaakov, Lecha Zama Yisrael, he says, I can't do it. Ma Ekov Lo Kabo Kael. I can't curse, because Kael didn't curse. That represents him looking to extend beyond Kael. But Hashem isn't letting that happen. And with regards to trying to have the truncated Yud and Hey, Ma Ezom Lo Zoam Hashem, the reason why Bilam mentions those two names of Kael and Yud Kei Vav Kei is because those are the names that he's looking to move away from, to lengthen and to shorten. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing him to do that. And that ultimately is what Bilam is referring to in the beginning, when he says to them that however much money you give me, at the end of the day, if Hashem isn't prepared for it, I will not be able to act against it. La'asos ketana o gedola. I can't make anything small. I can't make anything big. I can't take the name of Yud Kei Vav Kei and turn it, make it small into Yud and Hei. And I can't take Kale, make it big into Elohim, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't let me. And this is the beer of the Vilna Gaon, which, once again, is an altogether different way of looking at these, the way that the words go together, Lo Zalm Hashem, Lo Kavo Kael. And these are some of the currents that are passing through Parshas Balak. We'll leave it over there for this evening.